This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. We're back in action. So much going on today. I think 3 o'clock, there's going to be a presser with Cash Patel. I don't really know what's going to be happening there. In fact, they haven't announced the topic. Could there be more indictments, more investigations, more discoveries about what they took over when they took over that building? We'll have to see. And we'll keep you up to date on the developments throughout the day. Brett Baer is standing by. He's going to be with us in a second. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, at the bottom of the hour. Quick reminder, Patriot Awards coming up November 6th at 8 o'clock, foxnation.com/Patriot Awards. You can see all the action live. This is going to be, they say, the biggest ever. The surprises they haven't even told us yet, but say picture big and then picture actually bigger than that. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The Schumer shutdown strategy might be the biggest cell phone that we've seen in Washington in an awful long time. This whole discussion, it has no way out for Senate Democrats, so I think it'll go on a while.
Yeah, shutdown insanity. Both sides locked in their position as Trump assumes more power and OMB director slashes more jobs while paying our troops for now. Chuck, I have news. You're not winning, and the American people are the ones losing.
Number two.
And that is the stuff of dictatorships.
He has definitely decided he's going to use the power of the federal government to attack American cities and the people who live there.
In a country that is losing its democracy, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Complain?
Unbelievable. ICE under fire by cartels, by Dems, by activists, while forging forward, making city streets making city streets illegal immigrant criminal free, if that's possible.
Number one.
We have told them we want disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently.
Perhaps. And there is a lot of violence still in Gaza. Gaza peace deal moves forward as Hamas takes aim at would-be collaborators and still has yet to return 21 hostage bodies as the world hails the Trump-led end to war while haters still hate. And just to give you an idea what's happening, first off, it's a breach that Hamas has not delivered the 28 bodies. They said they can't find them. They're doing their best to collect them. They handled over 4 more yesterday, one of which was not an Israeli. Number two, we are seeing that Hamas is systematically trying to kill their opposition. They on public view, as well as being taped, executed 33 people they said were collaborating with the Israelis. But there are some clans that the Israelis identified and armed. They're now being targeted. What should the Israelis do about this as the IDF is still in the country? Brett Baer joins us now. His book, To Rescue the Republic, Teddy Roosevelt and the Birth of a Superpower, is available coming up next week, October 21st. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
So your thoughts about what the next move is if Hamas just keeps killing the potential opposition and not putting down their guns?
Yeah, I think there'll be a decision about Israel going back in. And, you know, I think that there's an effort to try to prevent that, to try to see what else can be done. The only other thing that can be done would be a quick deployment of Arab forces from Gulf states or other places. But that takes coordination and would have to happen quickly because those killings are happening now. These are groups and tribes and different elements inside Gaza that kind of wanted to bring an end to all of this fighting and worked with Israel at times, and now there's a retribution on the ground, and they're going to try to prevent that. And if IDF has to go back in, that's it changes the whole dynamic again.
The former spokesperson for the IDF, Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, said this morning, cut 6.
What Hamas is doing is settling scores. It isn't against people that have cooperated with Israel. It's against various critics in Gaza. It's against people who are trying to rise up against Hamas's oppression. These are Palestinian Muslims. Yes, nothing Jewish here, and no Mossad agents are being executed, just ordinary Palestinians from rival factions and rival clans. And Hamas is doing what they do best. They are thugs, and they're executing people in town squares in broad daylight, in typical Hamas fashion.
So the thing is, this is a familiar strategy. Remember during the surge, the Petraeus and company would empower the tribes, friendly tribes that wanted to stand up to Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And they got empowered and they took back their country. So the Israelis identified clans they could deal with. They armed them. They supported them. They provided security for them. And now that they're out, they look like they could be targets. That's the difference. We were there to protect the tribes that worked with us.
Yeah, exactly, and now the ceasefire has pulled Israel out. I mean, it's a hop, skip, and a jump. They can get back in there very quickly, and that is the decision that's going on right now. In the meantime, you know, this thought about an Arab force really was seen or is seen as the broader picture of security, so that eventually you have some stability, some Palestinian governing authority with the help of Arab neighbors and Muslim neighbors.
So, Brett, the other thing that we're watching is the drama on the streets of Chicago, the drama on the streets of Portland and in Los Angeles. They're trying to, in Chicago, Pritzker talked about trying to arrest ICE agents. Can you believe that? Can you imagine Chicago police arresting ICE agents? That's what Pritzker's threatening. Now we know that the DHS has discovered and released the fact that not only are ICE agents not getting cooperations with Chicago, they're getting targeted by cartels. $2,000 is offered for those who can gather intelligence or dox immigration agents. $5,000 to $10,000 for kidnapping of standard ICE officers. Up to $50,000 for assassinating high-ranking officers. And I don't hear much condemnation from the governor or the mayor.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning, actually, if you think about all the dangers and threats that these agents go through. We are in a back and forth, and some of it is political, some of it is beyond that, and it is dangerous. And we're seeing that on the streets of Chicago and other places.
So the other thing is we have the shutdown that's happening right now, the 15 days in, and there's really no end in sight. And now that we're seeing that they did a poll, though, more people seem to slightly blame Republicans at 67% than Democrats, 63%, and 63% blame Trump. Do you get the sense either side is winning?
No, neither side is winning. And there is movement. There are a couple of Democrats who shifted
initially.
You know, each one of these votes. And, you know, soon is going to continue to do these continuing resolution votes where, again, the money is at the funding level that the Biden administration set. And it gets you to the end of the year so that you can negotiate these individual appropriations bills. I think, you know, the average American is not down in the weeds on Washington process. And this is a very process-oriented story. That said, I think that, you know, Republicans do have a lot of leverage here, and the checks are stopping, you know, this week. Next week, the House staff and the Senate staff stop getting paid. Be interesting to see if suddenly everything speeds up.
What about this? We have no King's March. Everyone says that Democrats want everyone in town and be in the shutdown during the no King's March. Does that have anything to do with it, or?
I mean, it could. It's all a political thing. I mean, Chuck Schumer kind of let the cat out of the bag when he said this is really good for Democrats. And Democrats have since had to answer for that statement. I mean, it's really good for nobody that the government has shut down. Politically, it's hard to see a cut and dry winner. And, you know, over time, the president feels like, you know, they are going to continue to cut where they can cut, even, you know, and the shutdown opens the door for them to do that. I think that there's got to be a solution as far as negotiations, as far as healthcare subsidies. And just so everybody understands, the reason there were healthcare subsidies for Obamacare is that the Obamacare original premise, the blueprint, was that the market itself was going to drive prices down and the pool of participants was going to drive prices down. Well, it didn't happen. So Democratic administration with a Democratic Congress inserted subsidies to make sure it was down, but it was artificially down because the federal government was giving the money. Well, those subsidies expire at the end of the year. Giving up a benefit is really tough in after your government gives it to you.
Yes, and that's the debate. Senator Thune is offering today to fund the Defense Department, the whole budget. That includes full pay for the military and everything they need to buy new weapons and systems. Do you think that has a chance at passing?
Yeah, I mean, I do. It's just that the current environment, everybody's in their corners, you know, and you would have some Democrats who are, you know, defense-oriented who would vote for it hands down, but maybe because of the back and forth over the government shutdown, it somehow changes the dynamic. I don't know. They're going to press forward with all of these votes because the Senate's still in session. The House is not. And they're going to see what they can get done.
So what could you tell us, tell the American public about to rescue the American spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the birth of a superpower?
Yeah, I'm really excited. You know the figure of Teddy Roosevelt very well since you've written about him, but such larger-than-life figure in American history. And I think at this point, you know, with what we're facing around the world, the SodaStraw look at the moments that he determines that America needs to be forward-leaning and a leader in the world is kind of really important right now. And some of these books, they hit at the right time as far as seeing back to history, how we've been there before. I think this Teddy Roosevelt book is one of them. It comes out the 21st, and I'm excited about it. You know, every time you get a new book, it's another push of looking back in history for me and finding really nuggets that can tell us where we've been and where we may be.
And you know, one of my first field trips or everywhere in Long Island is to Sagamore Hill. Teddy Roosevelt's last home was his summer home.
Awesome.
And then family home. And then,
been there.
Yeah, so it's pretty great. And then you have his great-grandson remembers going there, and Teddy Roosevelt's wife, his great-grandmother, was still alive. And that was really a house. So it's pretty crazy.
A real house. Tweed Roosevelt, I interviewed him for the hour special that we'll put out, and I know you've talked to him before too. It's really amazing to go back in time and to see this remembrance of this guy that now, as history has passed, is really one of the top presidents in history's eyes.
And of course, Long Island University, where the Patriot Awards will be, there's the Teddy Roosevelt School, and Tweed is the president of it. So full circle, perfect time to put out to rescue the American spirit. Brett, I'm sure you're going to be in New York for this, right?
I will. I'll be in New York next week, so I'll come by do in-person radio.
Sounds good. Brett Baer, thanks so much. We'll see you tonight at 6 o'clock and the Brett Baer podcast, too. Rich Lowry, bottom of the hour. Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669. There's a lot of moving parts today. Could have went many different directions, including Venezuela, where we're hitting, including big meeting on Friday with Ukrainians leader President Zelensky and what happened with NATO yesterday. We're going to go over all this stuff, as well as the latest on the historic peace deal. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
You name it. The Trump administration has taken an unprecedented policy of extorting these institutions to toe the Trump political line, and that is the stuff of dictatorships.
He has definitely decided he's going to use the power of the federal government to attack American cities and the people who live there.
In a country that is losing its democracy, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, complain? Yes.
Every authoritarian leader has had his grim reaper.
So I don't even know what that even means, that last statement. But seriously, it just shows you can't please any of these people any of the time. Josh Rogan, really surprising. I mean, this guy was so critical of the foreign policy of Joe Biden, deservedly. Disaster in China, disaster in the Middle East, disaster in Afghanistan. We don't know anywhere he succeeded, literally anywhere. People were happy he wasn't Donald Trump, but now you know why they're happy? Because they could run all over us. They could take advantage of us. No one's demanding everyone pay their fair share of NATO. No one was demanding that you join us in pushing back on China. And certainly in Afghanistan, there was nobody to relay to NATO that we were pulling out in a timely fashion. This guy was a disaster. And to see other people who are knowledgeable, especially Josh Rogan, who's a good guy, I'm really surprised. So I look at a guy like Dave Ignatius, and I say clearly he gets it. He just wants to see a successful policy. Then on the other hand, you see David Sanger of the New York Times, another guy with great foreign policy contacts and experience. The glass is always half empty when he comes to talking about Trump. He gives him credit, but there's got to details. There's not enough detail. The president should be digging down, leaving teams behind. So I'm going to let you know there are some critics. And then there's Bill Maher, who points out, look, I didn't vote for him, but he's doing some good things. Cut 10.
I always say this. You cannot ever deny success. You just have to give your respect, even if it's not your thing. Have the humility to give it up for enormous success on any level.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Trump, not my choice, didn't vote for him, but
somehow, a lot of people did.
And he's, I can't deny the success.
I can't either.
Yeah.
And he's the president.
That is William H. Macy. I don't know where he stands politically, but he's talking with Bill Maher. They're drinking as usual in his club random. And he's just saying, also, he went on to say that he had the 57 different lines ridiculing that Trump has ridiculed, has said in the past about Bill Maher, 57 negative quotes about Bill Maher from Donald Trump. So Donald Trump looked at it, laughed, and signed it. And Bill Maher thought that was the greatest. Now, still, the next week, Bill Maher said, I had a good time with him, and he was very personable, and people got mad at him. And the next week, Bill Maher had a monologue, and he was critical of the president, and the president said, I wasted my time. That was a total waste of time. I really don't think it was. I really think you make gains when people get a chance to know you. I mean, you're getting a chance to see the Donald Trump of the Apprentice days, where he has fun, hops up behind a microphone, kind of has fun with, oh, I don't like my enemies, and, you know, I'm not allowed to say these things like women are attractive, it's politically incorrect. That's the guy that's always having fun. The first term was no fun because of the indictments, and it's all in Eric Trump's book. But this time, I think that he's seeing accomplishments, and he's not overreacting to what's happening. I think it has a lot to do with the chief of staff that's thoroughly backing him, not turning on him. I think it has to do with the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, same person, who thoroughly understand when they should take the lead and when they shouldn't. And I've never seen the president hit it off with one staffer in particular, and that's Marco Rubio, like he has right now. He also called him the best Secretary of State in American history. At the same time, Rubio's selflessness was never more on display as he let Steve Witkoff take the initiative when shuttle diplomacy with Ukraine and Russia and with the Middle East and with Iran. He said, okay, fine, go ahead. You do it. I got enough to do here. I got Venezuela. I'll oversee this process. Jump in when you need me. I'm all about what it takes to be successful. Trump loves that. Rich Lowry's coming up next. We'll go a little bit more detailed into it. And other people that were able to somehow, some way, compliment Donald Trump on this, including Hillary Clinton. Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It gives me great pleasure to tell you that Simply Safe is now available at 50% off because you're listening to this podcast. So go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Now, why is Simply Safe so perfect? Number one, it's easily put in. Number two, it's unbelievably effective. Number three, they're using AI now to stop the break-in, not just catch the people that are doing it, but to stop them before they infiltrate your life and destroy your personal property. I personally trust these people. This is a game changer. The agents take action while the intruder is still on the outside. They confront the intruder, letting them know they're being watched on camera, and you know they're going to head for the hills because they're going to head right to prison if they don't, and hopefully they still will. There are no long-term contracts. There are no hidden fees. Get this, the U.S. News and World Report, they named them, Simply Safe, the best home security system. There's a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what price can you put on safety? Well, Simply Safe is easy to install. They're always improving the product, and it's affordable. Why can't you be safe? The answer is, of course you can. Go get Simply Safe. Save your 50% by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. Get it.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Take that to Chicago. They had 571 homicides last year. Pritzker should be begging Donald Trump to come in. And, you know, what you said about Memphis, we have Mayor Paul Young working with us. He's amazing. He's a Democrat. He wants to make Memphis safe. Right here in D.C., Sean, look how safe D.C. is now because of Muriel Bowser working with Donald Trump. Metro Police, Transit Authority Police, right here, working with all of our federal agents hand in hand and our National Guard. Pritzker's lost his mind.
I think so, too. And in Chicago, they hurled rocks at the feds after an illegal immigrant rammed into a Border Patrol car. So get this. The Border Patrol car is driving. They get rammed by another car, and you think it's a crazy activist. It's an illegal immigrant criminal. So they chased him down and got him. Then demonstrators caught wind of his presence, and they soon gathered. They started throwing rocks and bottles at the authorities as they try to arrest this guy. Meanwhile, ICE has not taken down the fence. A judge decided they should not have put up. What they did is extended their perimeter because of security concerns. They put a fence. They go, well, no, we think that's an overreaction. Some judge said that, but they're refusing to take it down. Look about Oregon. Now it's been discovered they now spend more on programs offering free health care for illegals than they do their entire state police, which they're severely undermanned. They have $1.5 billion in combined in state and federal taxpayer dollars into that program. Imagine that, working that hard to get so little and to know your money was going to illegal immigrants who now will be coming by the thousands because they know they get this great perk. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, joins us now. Rich, you see what the president's doing in Memphis, in Los Angeles, in Portland, D.C., and now Chicago. Yet in Chicago and Portland, this is one clash after another. Karl Rove says it's bad politics for the Republicans. What do you think?
Yeah, the polling shows that people don't necessarily like these National Guard deployments. But look, you go to Washington, D.C., and you crush crime in the city. That's whether it's popular or not, and that's going to be popular, it's a good thing. So Washington, D.C., of course, is a special case because the federal government basically runs Washington, D.C. in a way it doesn't these other cities. But it's totally legit to send the National Guard to protect other federal agents and federal property. That's entirely legal. I don't think it moves the needle in crime necessarily. For that, you need, you know, the ATF and the DEA going in and helping break up these gangs. But if you're a Pritzker or a Mayor Johnson, you should want that. Why wouldn't you want federal assistance reducing crime in your jurisdiction? It's insane.
It is. And now we find out that they're putting bounties. Cartels are putting bounties on ICE's heads. Find out where they live. Here's $2,000. Find out and dox their house. More than the 5,000. You want to shoot them. They get tens of thousands. So why is that okay? Why is that okay with any Democrat or Republican governor or mayor? It seems to be no problem in Oregon and Illinois.
Yeah, so this is why they're wearing masks. And there have been no kidding terrorist attack against ICE facilities. We've had a couple of them in Texas. There was that horrible shooting a couple of weeks ago. But even before that one, Brian, I don't know whether you focused on this, no kidding, ambush that this Antifa cell carried out against an ICE facility where they're graffitiing the vehicles in the parking lot in the hopes that ICE officials would leave the facility and then be shot. So the ICE facility, ICE officers didn't leave the facility, but a cop showed up and got shot. I mean, this is serious stuff, and it doesn't help to have the left portraying the ICE as though they're the Gestapo. If they're the Gestapo, violent resistance is justified, but they're not, of course.
So she mentioned that you're getting cooperation from the Democratic governor in D.C. and the Democratic mayor in D.C. and the Democratic mayor in Memphis. Listen to what they've done. Listen to Pam Bondi, Cut 17.
Going back to Memphis, you gave the great stats on Memphis. You know how many missing children we found in Memphis? 44. Finding one missing child makes it all worthwhile. 44 missing children.
By the way, what is a missing child?
A missing child is a missing child who's been taken away
abducted
from their parents, abducted children who are on their own, all under the age of 18, teenagers and younger. 44 missing children. Some have been taken by non-custodial parents. 44 have been recovered. Finding one is enough to make it all worthwhile.
So they're making gains, and Memphis asked for help. So yeah. I'm wondering where this goes. They stay for 60 days, roughly.
Yeah, Memphis should be a great city, has a great history, but it's just terrible. I was there not too long ago. I went to a coffee shop in the downtown. I was like, am I in the worst neighborhood in Memphis? And it was just the center of the downtown. So they desperately need help, and other communities do as well. But the Democrats, especially this is led by Pritzker, Kamala Harris has echoed it too, are portraying this as waging war on these cities, right? You come and have ICE agents arrest people who shouldn't be there in the first place, and then you have the National Guard protecting the ICE agents, and that's supposedly an act of war. It's absurd.
So let's talk about the mayor's race in New York City. Andrew Cuomo has to score a knockout in these two debates. One is tomorrow night. The other one's next Wednesday, I think. But here he is talking about the dangers of Mondami. The avowed socialist, the president calls him his little commie. Cut 41.
This constant divisiveness by the assemblyman, this constant placement of wedges between people, is cancerous to New York City. Anti-Semitic. The New York Police Department, racist, wicked, corrupt, anti-queer, a threat to public safety. Who says things like this?
And I tell you what, Governor Cuomo, I rarely say this, is right. It was everything that he said. And for some reason, he didn't think it was necessary to bring up during the primaries, thought he'd just coast. And now he's about 13 points down. So he's going to be on our channel today at 3 Eastern, and he's going to be doing those two debates. How do you make sense of the 33-year-old?
Well, he's gotten a lot of free running room because up to this point, the mayoral debate has largely, not entirely, but largely been about Cuomo, Adams, who, of course, now exited, and Sliwa, debating who among those candidates is the worst, who's lying, who's getting what a corrupt deal from whom, and Mamdani has been running free. And we all know all the Oppo book on Mamdani. We've heard all of his greatest hits, which are totally ridiculous. But are Democrat outlets hearing that? If you're an average Democrat in New York City, have you absorbed that? So that's what needs to happen. Mamdani's unfavorables need to go up. You know, the problem is the communist has better favorable ratings than everyone else in the race.
By 10, yeah.
Yeah, and now there, you know, there's an opportunity to change that. But Cuomo didn't win the debates in the primary, and he sure as heck better win these two.
So there's over 550 homicides last year in Chicago, and they say there's no problem. Barack Obama is criticizing the problem. He knows Chicago has done nothing to help it. He can't even finish his library under budget, and it's destroyed the neighborhood it's being built on. Cut 45.
When you now start seeing the politicization of the military, deliberately.
They just landed in Chicago.
Yeah. When you have what looks like a deliberate end run around not just a concept, but a law that's been around for a long time, Posse Comitatus, that says you don't use our military on domestic soil unless there is an extraordinary emergency of some sort. That when you see an administration suggest that ordinary street crime is an insurrection or
a terrorist act.
Or a terrorist act.
That's Mark Maron helping him out. Your thoughts?
Well, they're not violating posse comitatus because the National Guard aren't making arrests. Nope. They're protecting federal assets and federal property. The president has the inherent authority to do that. Plus, it's in statute as well. So they totally misunderstand what's happening. And in Washington, D.C., it's not the National Guard making arrests. It's other federal domestic police agencies that are they're making arrests. It's totally appropriate. So it's fundamentally misleading and or confused. Right. Yeah, I was at Union Station not too long ago and the National Guard was there. There are eight guys standing around talking. Right. They're kind of a symbol of law and order. But they're not going in the neighborhoods arresting gangbangers. So he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I see him at Penn Station all the time before Trump, in between Trump and during the Bush years. They just do it. It's a show of force. So I want to bring
it to September 11th. Whenever you go to a train station in New York, you see guys with rifles. Right. That's not the militarization of the city. And the National Guard last 20 years has been deployed hundreds and hundreds of times to help with natural disasters, civil unrest during COVID. This is not waging war on the American people.
So a couple of things. The president's doing two things I really respect and are surprised at. He sees Central and South America as a China feeding trough, and he wants to stop it. And he's looking at Argentina. He said, look, if I help you out, you got to kick China out. They got rare earth. We know about the Panama Canal. And in Venezuela, you have a guy that is an illegitimate leader in Maduro, and he's blew up his fifth boat full of drugs. He said five people were killed. So your thoughts about whether the president going after his hemisphere?
Well, I think it's important to push back against China. We've seen this from the very beginning. This was part of Trump jawboning Panama over the canal, was to make sure that the Chinese influence gets out. That's totally appropriate. The drug boats, I do think he needs legal authorization to do it. Now, it's not as though any court's going to stop him, and it obviously has a huge deterrent effect. We've heard from Mexican cartels that aren't targeted in these attacks saying they've gotten their attention and they're being more careful. So I think it's going to have a salutary effect. But if he really wants to go in after Maduro, and there's some suggestions of that, I think that would need authorization as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we'd have trouble doing that, but we do put extreme pressure on. I don't know. I didn't see many lawsuits when President Obama was droning people all over Africa and the Middle East. They weren't read their Miranda rights.
Yeah, no, Trump is building on the precedent of what other presidents have done, you know, Libya and Syria and all the rest of that without congressional authorization. But I think it's deserved and appropriate here. I think would probably pass, but he's not going to ask for it and no one's going to stop him.
Right. Lastly, on China, they stopped buying our soybeans. They said they're going to limit our rare earth. We're coming back saying no more cooking oil. We're also encouraging Europe no longer to be the dumping ground of their products that we won't buy. Mm-hmm. Here's Kevin Hassett, Cup 46.
President Xi is up against the best team that any country has ever had for a negotiation like this. We've got President Trump, and you heard Secretary Scott Bessent today. I mean, this is a guy who's smart as can be and tough as nails. And the Chinese see that the normal games of bullying aren't going to work with us. But our hope is that the friendship of the two presidents and the desire of China to start being a law-abiding member of the community of nations, that ends up working in the end. But we've got a lot of leverage that we could use against them, and we're hopeful that they'll come to the table and work with Secretary Bessent right now, relatively soon, to start to move things forward.
Where do you see the leverage?
Well, look, this relationship is hugely important to both countries. The problem, Kevin's right, we have a lot of leverage, but China has a lot of leverage as well, obviously, with the rare earth. It's just a scandal that we let China dominate. This is such an important area for the modern economy and modern weaponry. I expect there'll be a deal. I think it'll be worked out. I don't think it'll be a great deal. I think it'll basically be a status quo deal, a little bit like the deal the first time around. But we got to lessen our dependence on China for a whole host of things, with rare earth at the top of the list.
I hear you. Thanks so much, Rich Lowry. National Review, right. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. We're going to come back, and we're going to be able to take some of your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Do you like the way the peace plan is progressing? The fact that he got the hostages out is already the biggest victory, but I'd love to see some type of sustained peace and some type of clean rebuild without being feared, you know, without there being a fear of being taken out by a terrorist or a sharpshooter. We'll see if that's possible. We'll discuss it when we come back. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Tang Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Good work on that one, President Trump. Now maybe you can not invade Portland. Just an idea. I'm fine with coming up with prizes and trophies to motivate. Give them the Nobel Reopen the Government and Leave Healthcare Alone prize.
How dare you, Nobel Committee? The man is a paragon of peace. He walks in the footsteps of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King. After all, who can forget what Nelson Mandela famously declared upon leaving prison? Fat, talentless Rosie O'Donnell should go back to Ireland.
All right, so not everybody's on board on late-night television. Just in case you went to bed early for the last few nights, that's pretty much what they're saying. So that's why they get a 1-8 and you don't get a 3-3 like Gutfeld gets, right? I mean, it's very simple. They're just not interested. I do know that Jimmy Fallon's going out of his way, and I'm curious. I don't know if you guys checked out The Tonight Show, if you've noticed, but I'm going to start DVRing it. They say Jimmy Fallon's going out of his way to not be political, which is tough when you do the day's events and you have to come up with a monologue every day. But I'd love to see if that's going to matter, because it's pretty cool what the president was able to pull off. You know what's interesting, and I know it must be just killing them, and some reporters have been good at it. When you watch them chanting for the president's name in Gaza and in Tel Aviv, and then you saw the way he was greeted by those Muslim Arab states, and how they said that he was a linchpin. So they have people doing the legwork like Kushner and Witkoff, and the president coming in and putting the pressure on when he has to with these different countries, Qatar too. So he's getting praise from Israel. He's getting praise from seven Arab states. Then he's getting praise from Gaza. And then you hear things where the hostages saying, who don't know the president, they're Israeli, while they're being kept there, they say they feared Trump. They hoped Kamala would have won. And they realized they immediately started getting treated better when Trump won the election. So if you're a late night joke writer, nothing funny about that. He looks like a normal, dare I say, very good president doing some extraordinary things. I don't know if I could kid around about that, but he does go after people that go after him all the time. But if you watch another one of his comments about Marco Rubio being the best Secretary of State ever, those two were ripping each other personally, professionally, every way possible. But once you fight it and it's over, it is over. But, you know, when Trump wins, maybe he's feeling different. If he loses, we'll see. What I do worry about is happening in Gaza right now. Hamas is out there going for revenge on different clans and people that might have been not all in, and seeing Hamas as the reason why their lives were ruined or their houses destroyed. And right now they're killing people, yet they're supposed to be disarming. Here's what the prime minister said to CBS yesterday, cut four.
First, Hamas has to give up its arms. And second, you want to make sure that there are no weapons factories inside Gaza. There's no smuggling of weapons into Gaza. That's demilitarization. We agreed that that's part of the plan. And we also agreed, okay, let's get the first part done. And now let's give a chance to do the second part peacefully, which is my hope. But if not, I think I heard the president speak tonight. He said, listen, they better do it or how can I speak for him? He said, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, that's pretty much him. You're not speaking for him, but he said it. But he also said he talked to Hamas, the leader. They're located in Qatar. There is a school of thought that maybe they don't have as much control over this, what's left of Hamas. Why? Because Yahya Sinwar and his brother Muhammad, both dead, the spiritual leader, all these, the guy in the wheelchair, dead, almost everybody dead. So you got these other people emerging who just want to kill. So there's about 7,000 left. Now, when you get that international police force in, it's police force, security force. There's right now, the only group I think that committed outside money is Indonesia. We reported today that it was Egypt and Qatar have put troops in. I have two things. Would Hamas target them? I say no way. And second, would they stop Hamas from targeting others? Would they actually enforce putting down the guns? Anything's better than the UN force, who ended up being compliant with Hezbollah and Hamas. But it's a question that needs to be answered and can be answered. Not. I just hope you have a group behind there from the State Department just pounding this every day.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's Brian Kilmeade from 1211 6th Avenue, right in Midtown Manhattan. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour is going to be a big one, an important one. We're also finding events today at 3 o'clock. I didn't even know this. Kash Patel will be going to the White House to have a joint press conference with the president. What's going to be his announcement? I'm not sure. Is it going to be about payments and the shutdown? I don't know. Quick announcement, though. I will tell you the Patriot Awards are coming up in November, on November 6th, 8 o'clock at LIU at Tillis Center. Hope everyone can get tickets and make the trip. A lot of great hotels. You can stay in New York City, take a train, get out there, or you can stay on Long Island. It is definitely going to be fun, and there's going to be huge names coming. Jennifer Say is going to be with us, the CEO of XXXY Athletics, author, filmmaker, business executives. Remember, she was president of Levi's for a while and an outstanding national champion gymnast. And then we'll do a simulcast on Varney & Company. And before we get to Senator John Husted, who is running for re-election, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The Schumer shutdown strategy might be the biggest cell phone that we've seen in Washington in an awful long time. This whole discussion, it has no way out for Senate Democrats, so I think it'll go on a while.
It will. Shutdown insanity. Both sides locked in their positions as Trump assumes more power and his OMB director slashes more jobs while paying our troops for now. Chuck Schumer, I have news. You are not winning, and the American people are clearly losing.
Number two.
And that is the stuff of dictatorships.
He has definitely decided he's going to use the power of the federal government to attack American cities and the people who live there.
In a country that is losing its democracy, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Complain?
Yeah. So when you get ICE, Border Patrol, ATF, as well as the local authorities, they call that authoritarianism, or is he trying to clean up the streets? ICE under fire by cartels, Dems, activists, you just heard, while forging forward and making big progress, even in Chicago, even in Portland.
Number one.
We have told them we want to disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently.
Yep. Gaza peace deal moves forward as Hamas takes aim at would-be collaborators. And still has yet to return 21 hostage bodies as the world hails the Trump-led end to the war and the freeing of the hostages. But haters will hate. Senator John Husted joins us now of Ohio. Welcome back, Senator.
Great to be with you.
Senator, I understand the only thing different about today's vote and ending the lockdown is that the Majority Leader Thune is going to put to a vote funding the whole Defense Department for the year, just isolated the whole Defense Department, R&D, everything on down. Is that true, and would you vote for it?
Well, I'm hopeful that we'll do something like that, because if the Democrats during the Schumer shutdown don't want to run government, then we should just move on without them. And funding our Defense Department, certainly an important priority for us. So I hope it's on the floor, and if it is, I'll vote for it.
All right. Let's also talk about overall. What do people of Ohio tell you about the shutdown?
They're frustrated, particularly, around our military bases and things like that. I mean, look, these are families who may not get paid, and they have young children, they have needs, and they are serving our country. And because Chuck Schumer is playing political games, they're not going to get a paycheck. And I know that frustrates them. It frustrates me. But I also don't hear anybody saying, hey, capitulate either, that we should give in to what Chuck Schumer's unreasonable demands are. I mean, literally, what he wants us to vote on would open the pathway to pay for health care for illegal immigrants. It would say, hey, you don't have to work in return for your health care benefits under Medicaid, all of these things that are undermine the American health care system. That's what he wants us to vote on, and we're not going to capitulate to that. He needs to pass his clean CR like he's done 13 times when Joe Biden was president and serve the American people. Chuck Schumer thinks he's winning, but the American people are losing, and ultimately he will pay the price for the frustration that the American public is going to feel in time over this.
So they did. Reuters did a poll and says 67% blame Republicans, 63% blame Democrats. Does it show he's winning?
I will tell you this. I don't know what the polling numbers are. In reality, I think most people don't have a lot of information about the details. But every time I talk to people out there, you ask about what people in Ohio think. I asked a crowd I was with the other night. I said, should we cave in to Chuck Schumer's demands or should we, you know, pass a clean CR and keep working to serve the American people? None of them wanted me to back down on it, and I'm not going to do that. But by the way, I voted 8 times to keep the government open.
Right.
So have my colleagues. So have 3 Democrats have come along with us. Giving in. This is so. I'm number 100. I'm like the newest member of the U.S. Senate. And what happens too many times around the legislative process is that we cave in to bad behavior. And once you start rewarding people who act like babies and selfishly, then you're going to encourage that to happen in the long run. And I think we should take a stand on this one and just go about doing the work of serving the American people. And the Democrats will come along when they will.
So Speaker Johnson speaking again today. Here's what Newt Gingrich, who knows a thing or two about shutdowns, recommended. Cut 30.
The number one thing for Republicans to remember is that other than Reagan, who was a former Democrat, and Trump, who's a former Democrat, Republicans generally don't communicate very well. And we have the arguments. I think Mike Johnson's doing a good job. But every Republican should learn the key arguments, repeat them ad nauseum, stop reporters, as the vice president did brilliantly the other day, when they're saying falsehoods, just cut them off and say that's false.
So that's the advice. Is it good advice?
It's very good advice. Yeah. They want to change the subject. We need to focus it on the fact that this is the Schumer shutdown. It is caused by Chuck Schumer not allowing Democrats to vote along with Republicans on this. The Democrats' proposal, 47 votes. We've had 55 votes for the Republican proposal. We just need 5 more Democrats to move on.
Senator, how do you feel about your prospective race against Sherrod Brown?
Hey, I'm an Ohio guy. He's a D.C. guy. He was elected 50 years ago, spent 32 years in Washington. He is just too liberal for Ohio, supporting transgender surgeries for minors, supporting boys playing girls sports, you know, allowing open borders, all of those things that Ohioans literally just rejected him on. Last November, when he lost to Bernie Moreno, 8 months later, he wants to come back. I'm confident that we'll win, but it'll be hard fight because you know how the Democrats campaign. They've campaigned tough. They campaign, with a lot more money. I mean, he spent $300 million in the last election cycle and lost. And they will flood the airwaves with lies, but honesty and hard work will prevail, and we will win. But it will be a tough battle.
So yesterday, Instagram announced there'll be 13-year-old restrictions on Instagram. Meta, Instagram, and I guess Facebook too, but most younger people use Instagram. You have a bill to protect children from AI companion chatbots and sexual content. What is this bill and how is it going to be implemented?
Yeah, well, it's really parental consent for anybody that's underage. We want in the digital world the same thing that we want in the physical world. You can't have adult content. We also want to protect when you know that it's a minor from any contemplation of suicidal ideation and all of those kinds of things. This is the next generation. Look, we've seen the results of social media, how it has harmed children greatly. Now we have these chatbots that children are interacting with that are engaging with adult content and things that are not appropriate for children. All we're saying is that this is no crackdown on freedom of speech. It just says you got to let mom and dad have parental consent. But then when you know it's somebody under 18, you can't get them information that they're not supposed to have, that you regulate the chatbots to do that. These tech companies, they're so talented in the algorithms that they use for these things. They can easily design chatbots to do this, and we got to protect our kids. We didn't do it with social media. We've got to do it with AI.
Well, yeah. How would it be implemented? You got to get buy-in from all the AI companies?
Well, no. We're just going to set a requirement that they have to do parental consent for children. And then that when they know, and they can easily know these things when they know that somebody signed up who's under 18 because the parent, you know, gave them permission, they did this, then they can make sure that the chatbot is programmed not to have inappropriate conversations with those children in terms of adult content, suicidal ideation, those kinds of things. And this is important that we do this because we lost – if we knew what social media was going to do to kids in the smartphone era, we would have done this on social media. But now chatbots can be even more powerful tools at becoming friends and collaborators with children, and we don't want to send our children down the wrong path.
Hear you. Good job. I can't see much resistance to this. Hopefully it'll get some bipartisan buy-in. Is there?
I think there is. Yeah, we just had a hearing in the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee last week, and this issue came up on a bipartisan basis. And I have been reaching out to many of my Democrat colleagues because, look, we all care about our kids. We all don't, you know, we love technology, but we don't want technology to take over our children. We want parents to parent our children, not AI companies or chatbots.
I can agree with that and maybe even get a co-sponsor out of it outside Fetterman. Senator John Husted, thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
You got it. We have some time on the back end. Speaker Johnson speaking right now. We're trying to see what he's actually announcing. We know where he stands. We know the Republicans stand. We know for the last 14, 15 days, they've pretty much said the same thing, and I understand it. See if anything changes now. We'll bring you the latest. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
They've shown by their actions and now their votes multiple times. Now, 9 times the Democrats have voted, counting the House and the Senate Democrats, they have voted to not pay the troops. They have voted to block their paychecks. And it's very serious stuff. And they don't seem to care at all. The problem we have right now is that in spite of President Trump's heroic efforts to make sure they get paid, that is a temporary fix because the executive branch's help is not permanent. It can't be. And if the Democrats continue to vote to keep the government closed, as they have done now so many times, then we know that U.S. troops are going to risk missing a full paycheck at the end of this month.
Yeah, I mean, so far, the military is going to get a couple of paychecks. That is Speaker Johnson just moments ago talking about what's happening with the shutdown. Basically, they do not want to continue funding the government at Biden levels, really. So the big, beautiful bill that passed, the budget that the president will put together, doesn't matter. It doesn't kick in yet. They're striking now. It's essentially going out on strike because they don't like what's coming. And that is a pareback of pandemic-level subsidies to Obamacare. They picked that out of the blue. So now, today, we'll find out if they really do feel bad for people who are serving our military, because Senator Thune is putting up a bill, and that bill will fund the government will fund the full Defense Department. So they're going to get paid, the paycheck, everything's going to be in there, as well as the R&D. Right now, they took money from R&D, $7 billion, in order to pay everybody their paychecks. But that's not going to last. It's true. You'll be getting back pay. It's true. But that means you have to have a situation where you're not in debt. If you're on overdraft in your checking account, barely making ends meet, if you're in the infantry and your family lives there, you know, you're making $35,000 a year or maybe $50,000, you can't really lose a paycheck. Especially while serving the country. Yeah, a lot of stuff is free, but not if you have a family. It gets a lot tougher. So the shutdown, I find extremely frustrating and unnecessary. There's so many other major stories going on, but you have other people saying the Democrats are doing so good with the shutdown. And I find the whole thing, I'm like, how could you be doing good by showing people it's not your job? They're playing these segments where the president, as a businessman, said, blame the president when you have a shutdown. That was in 2015. If you want to play something for 2017, 2018, 2022, I feel better about that. Because now you can see, what do you want the president to do? Just say, okay, you want those subsidies to continue. Anything else? Oh, you don't want the government cut back. You don't want anything, DOGE cuts. You want everyone restored. You want USAID back. You want PBS back. It's not going to happen. Senator Eric Schmidt is holding the line. Cut 27.
We're starting week three of the Schumer shutdown, and it's totally irrational, Larry. There's really not anything that they really want. They'll sort of talk about other things, but their offer on the table is $1.5 trillion worth of spending, you know, $5 billion for all these crazy programs that USAID, we defunded the rescissions package. They want health care for illegal immigrants. That's what they're offering. But really, this is about fighting Trump. So that's why it's not a rational discussion. We'll see what happens this week.
Yeah, that's why we'll just sit down and negotiate. Negotiate why? And here's my analogy. If someone walks up to you and says, we're going to take over your house. And then you say, what are you talking about? So then they move in. And you say, well, if you want to negotiate, there'll be some type of negotiation to leave. Why wouldn't you negotiate? Well, because you have no business walking to my house anyway. You had no business walking out. The appropriations bills weren't done together. They didn't finish it. Both of them are responsible. So I would love for the appropriation bills to be done in August. This way, when they take their vacation, they come back and vote on them in September. But we had in the middle of December now, the end of September, a lockout that's now been 15 days old. So that's where they're standing. Here's Josh Holmes, Cut 24.
What you're seeing out of OMB today, the Schumer shutdown strategy might be the biggest cell phone that we've seen in Washington in an awful long time, in that they're so angry that they don't have control of the federal government that they're willing to give away the only leverage they have in terms of directing spending on priorities that they've had. Remember, they're arguing about a budget that was enacted under Biden, Joe Biden's continuing resolution, and that's what they're arguing against. And then they fuse in the health care component, of course, a system that they entirely designed soup to nuts and asked taxpayers to subsidize once it didn't work. This whole discussion, it has no way out for Senate Democrats, so I think it'll go on a while.
So now the OMB is digging in. They're making every preparation to batten down the hatches, so to speak, and ride out the Democrats. And they say they're going to pay the troops, pay law enforcement, continue with RIFs, and they're going to start cutting Democratic programs. So no doubt about it. They're not even going to pretend to be fair and balanced about it. They want to put the pressure up on Democrats and let them feel the heat. And so when they look back, they'll say, why exactly, or what are we holding out for? Oh, health care and making people eligible for it that don't deserve it and providing money for illegal immigrants to get health care. They don't necessarily go in and fill out a form and get it, except for in New York, it seemed to do that. But what they do is they get it. They get it because these hospitals are given a whole bunch of money to treat them. And they use that as a primary care facility, which is that's part of what's wrong with the system. At some point, they got to sit down and admit Obamacare has failed. Prices have not come down to make it exist. You have to continue to subsidize at a dizzying rate. So we'll see, because today there's going to be another vote. The minority leader blasted Republican, the minority leader in the House blasted Republican for not being there in the House. But why should they be there? They already voted to continuing to fund the government. They're all prepared to come back in 24 hours. Why should they hang out in Washington? The claim is they don't want to swear in another Democratic congressman to replace the one that passed away. And that congressman woman will vote to be the 218th vote to release the Epstein files, which release everything. This is the biggest non-story in America today. The only people that should care about the people that were involved, the girls that were abused. I'll look at that press conference. Everyone else sees total political opportunism. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Jennifer Say, CEO of XXXY Athletics. Don't move.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So Jennifer Say is here, the CEO of XXXY Athletics, author, filmmaker, business executive, retired national champion gymnast, although she might go come out and maybe start competing again. Is there a chance, Jen?
No way. My body is
no
broken.
No balance beam? No uneven bars?
I can barely walk.
Oh, really?
Days.
Okay. Yeah. So Jennifer, by the way, you were CEO of Levi's too. Right.
I was the president and almost CEO.
Almost CEO. So now you're launching this brand new brand, and I want to talk about that. But first, you just moved from California to Colorado. Better?
It is better. I moved 4 years ago. People say to me all the time, you just went from, you know, out of the frying pan into the fire. It's the same. I don't think it's the same. I think there's hope for Colorado. There's a real libertarian streak there really? That you don't have in California.
Because I noticed a couple of years ago, I went to Denver, and the first time I saw it was like 20 years ago. They were doing Olympic Sports Festival was out there.
Yeah, because it's in Colorado Springs.
Yeah. And I went out there. I go, wow, Denver's beautiful. It's like they shrink wrapped it every night. And then I went back a couple of years ago, and I saw so many empty stores and so much homeless. And people say, yeah, you don't want to walk around at night around here.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's perfect, but it is nothing compared to San Francisco how awful, which is where I lived. I mean,
is this mayor helping San Francisco? This new mayor,
Daniel Lurie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't live there anymore. I mean, I hear both sides. I hear some people saying it's better. He definitely is connected to the business community and knows that that needs to be revived.
Yeah, you think?
I mean, there's no downtown. You know, it took 4 or 5 years for them to send people back to work in offices from COVID.
Which is insane.
I mean, when Lurie took office, which was just a few months ago, he just now called for city employees to go back to the office to go to work. So it killed the downtown. All those, local, those lunch shops closed, the restaurants closed, the homeless took over, drug using homeless took over. 50% of the storefronts closed down and are boarded up in downtown San Francisco.
It's incredible. And now the 49ers have all those injuries on top of that, but unrelated. Jennifer, the other thing about Colorado in particular, you just were telling me about the misgendering. I thought you were kidding.
No. It's a law now. A law just was signed by Governor Polis. Misgendering is a crime. And there's several applications here. We are actually suing my business. XXXY Athletics is suing the state of Colorado because there's this sort of public accommodations. That's the language they use, that an individual is should be free from being misgendered and discriminated against in public. So if I have a pop-up shop and somebody comes into my shop and I say, can I help you, sir? And it is a man in a dress that thinks he's a woman, I could be criminally charged.
That's so insane.
I know. Even Gavin Newsom wouldn't sign a law like this literally he didn't sign a law like this into being. So Colorado's lost its mind. There's several lawsuits against the state on this one.
Yeah.
Because the other application is a child can be taken from the home if a parent does not affirm.
So the kid comes home at 14 years old and says, I want to be, but the boy wants to be a girl. And the parent says, no, you're not. They might take the kid.
If the school finds out, if Child Protective Services find out, they could. Or in a custody battle, if one parent affirms and the other doesn't.
Unbelievable. So we just found out that transgender, the whole thing is plummeting big time. It has a lot to do, I think, with the people waking up and sobering up. Transgender identification and free fall among young Americans. And they just analyzed data from 2025 and compare it. It's down from was down to up 9%, now down to about 3%.
Right. This is youth.
Among youth.
Yeah, it was a trend. And unfortunately, some children permanently altered their bodies.
Too late for them. Yeah, but a lot of them are, so, for some reason, there's an inordinate amount of celebrities doing this.
It's
Why
like
would that
every.
Be? To be cool, to show you're tolerant?
It's a big virtue signal. To have a child that is trans and be a celebrity, it's like carrying an Hermes Birkin bag, I think, these days.
Couple of things. Let's talk about your business, XXXY. With it, there's a lot of challenges in the clothing industry in making things here. Have you been able to make things here?
We make our hats in America. We make accessories in America, hats and water bottles. We have an amazing water bottle manufacturer, and we're working really hard to bring more manufacturing for our T-shirts and our performance wear into America. It's tough. There's not a ton of capacity. There aren't a lot of factories, and there's not a lot of capability. There just aren't sewing machine manufacturers here even anymore because all the factories left 25 years ago. So I think there's going to be increasing demand for Made in the USA, and more people are going to build factories, and I think we'll be able to do it. But it's not something you can do overnight.
Well, but that's why the tariffs really affect you guys. How is it affected?
It impacts us for sure, but that's okay. We're not raising prices.
Right. Is it hard? And you would like to – this is what I've heard from CEOs – is they said that we just like to know where it's going. Like not knowing and the change is so hard to budget.
We've just built in increased pricing and assumed slightly lower margins for the time being. We're just starting out. We're only 18 months old. I assume I'm going to gain all of that back with scale. As my cost of goods goes down with scale, I'll gain all that margin back. And I have strong margins. I'm not going to pass this on to the customer. I'm going to work on figuring it out myself, bringing down my cost of goods, bringing more manufacturing here into the United States, and we'll work it out over the next 2 years.
I also noticed, too, is that people are moving, looked at it, get out of China, and Vietnam might be an alternative.
We don't make anything in China. That's my rule. No. Good. China. There's no transparency. You're not allowed in the factories there. We visit every single factory. We know the people who make our products. We see the working conditions. We feel good about the working conditions. You can't do that in China. For me, that's just a non-starter.
Right.
But Vietnam has great capability in terms of performance, innovation, those fabrics. So we do make some stuff there.
How do you think the administration's doing?
I'm all in.
Yeah. So far,
I'm very
so
happy.
Good.
I mean, what just happened in Israel? That's amazing.
I think you're.
It's incredibly sad. There's only 20 remaining hostages alive, but what a gift that they're home.
Right, and some did come home earlier. Just some people. I'm just amazed. Will still even find something negative to say. For example, I saw that Martin Sheen, of all people. Do we have that clip of Martin Sheen? This is with his advice to President Trump. Well, I know I have it here.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, here it is. Cut 21.
You've got to realize, sir, that you are the biggest nothing in the world. You stop listening to all these people around you, these sycophants, who are encouraging you to be your non-human self. Get in touch with that humanity. Stop fussing with your hair. And don't worry about your tie. And stand up straight and speak clearly, not from your throat. Speak from your heart. And start being human. That's what you were made for, not golf. So there you are, Mr. President, with all due respect, sir.
And, of course, he played the president, so he's an expert.
Well, yeah, he was on The West Wing, a show which I actually did enjoy. It's insane. They can't grant him the release of the hostages and essentially brokering what we hope will be long-term peace. They can't grant the man this. No one's been able to do it.
I think that also blows people away is on the world stage, they kind of like him. You have these leaders liking him. The Arab world likes him. The Palestinians were chanting his name in Gaza. And then, of course, in Tel Aviv, his approval rating is about 99%.
It makes him crazy.
Right.
Meaning the Americans who hate him. Yeah, it makes him absolutely bonkers. It's hilarious. They cannot understand that people actually respect and like him and find him sort of charming.
So we have somebody, we're going to have a debate tomorrow. There's going to be two debates, but there's going to be a debate tomorrow on the mayor's race. It's going to be Curtis Sliwa, it's going to be Andrew Cuomo, and it's going to be Mondami. He's going to be here today speaking with Martha McCallum. What's your take on this race?
Well, I try not to pay too much attention because I don't live here, but and it enrages me. Mamdani's way ahead, 13, 18 points, depending on the poll you look at. I do have two children that live here. I do pay some attention.
So they'll be able to vote.
Yes, they're both in their 20s, and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law live here. Look, I think he's a horrible candidate, and I don't like Cuomo. I can't stand Cuomo. He was horrible on COVID, as we all know, but I think I would be forced to possibly vote for him if I was here, because I don't think Sliwa has a chance. Mamdani, where do we start? He wants to spend $65 million to allow young people to change their sex, which is impossible. He wants to take taxpayer money to do that. He wants to kill gifted and talented programs in the public schools.
And charter schools.
Which, by the way, that happened in San Francisco, the killing of the gifted and talented and, just obliterating the magnet schools for academic excellence. It was such a disaster, they had to reverse course. It doesn't work anywhere. Don't you want to give these exceptional children an opportunity? We just want to tell them they can't excel. It's so
socialists
awful.
And communists don't see it that way.
And this man went to one of the most elite magnet schools in the city,
right.
Bronx Science.
Well, living in a rent-controlled apartment.
And now he wants to snatch that ladder up right behind him.
It's crazy. Jennifer, continue success with XXXY Athletics. Hope everyone will go get all your apparel. It's great to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and tell your kids how to vote. All right? Don't be afraid to. We'll do some with Varney and Company in a moment, then squeeze in some calls on the back end. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, we'll have a couple of minutes before Stuart Varney joins us, so it'll be good. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll come back. By the way, we just have a just quick note. Now, November 1st, I'll be at History, Liberty, and Laughs in Pennsylvania, Pottstown. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. We've got some tickets. It'll stream on Fox Nation. It will be fun. It'll be exciting. And I look forward to seeing all of you in person. A few tickets left. VIP is going out, so we extended it. Now we're over. We hit a new mark, so we opened it up. So let's listen in together.
All of them on the upside, and that's helping the NASDAQ to a near 300-point gain. 10:51 Eastern. That means it's Kilmeade time. All right, Brian, welcome back. Governor of New York, Kathy Hochul. She wasn't very happy with Zohran Mamdani just a couple of months ago. But now she's changed her tune, and she's saying this. Roll tape.
I'm not raising taxes on people at a time when affordability is the big issue.
Even on the
taxes.
Wealthy.
I don't want to lose any more people to go to Palm Beach. We've lost enough.
Okay, now let's see what she's saying now. Roll that tape, please.
I found him to be eminently rational. And understand this is something that would take an act of the legislature and the governor to sign. And so he's wants to work with me on this. And we don't have the details flushed out.
So at first she's not keen on Mamdani. Now she finds him eminently reasonable. That's about as big a flip-flop as I've seen in a long time. Why is she doing this, Brian?
Stuart, I think it's because her primary, she's got a left-wing opponent, which was her lieutenant governor. And she feels as though she's got to seal that off. And then you have somebody in Elise Stefanik, who has knocked her lead down, couldn't be more conservative, to 6 points in the last poll that I saw. So she's being hemmed in from the left and about to be hammered by the right. And she's willing to go left in order to seal off that primary, and then she'll go back to the middle, which makes me say, don't believe one word she's saying. I mean, you literally don't believe one word. The fact that she would endorse someone and that person would look at her and go, yeah, I'm still not endorsing you. Why? Because he sees more eye to eye with her former lieutenant governor. And then you got to tell me that she thinks it's a good idea to raise taxes in New York City. Are you insane? People will leave. They just give them an opportunity and they're going to head for the hills. They'll increase the Florida real estate market. The other thing is policies are ridiculous. Free buses, they say, will cost $800 million. That's how much this city will lose. This city was so broke, they have to come up with this thing called congestion pricing to charge you for going across the city. They say, well, how are we supposed to repair the MTA system? So even though we're trying to stop it, President Trump is trying to end it, this guy comes in and says, hey, I'm going to give free buses. Wait a second. Who's maintaining those buses? What has happened in the past? When you give away free buses, it gets full of vagrants. It gets full of crime.
Exactly.
It's really dirty. Who's paying to clean those trains?
You don't know how many people have come to me. They try to take their kids to school in New York City on the bus. Those kids now, in the future, when they're free, there'll be all kinds of vagrants, drug addicts, and crazies camping out on the buses. That's what Mamdani is offering here. It just makes no sense to me.
Get rid of charter schools, too, as well as those classes for the gifted. Really? That sounds pretty communist to me. That's why people leave their communist countries and the socialist countries to come here. He wants to bring it here. You know, you watched where you used to live over in the U.K. Almost every one of these mayors now is Muslim, bringing in some form of Sharia law those communities, changing a country. This better not just be the beginning of a change before we wake up and find out that this is not a capitalist country anymore.
Well, they've lost their freedom of speech in Britain, and that's a fact. Brian, here's another one. Ilhan Omar refused to credit Trump for securing the Israel-Hamas peace deal. Omar said, and I'm quoting now, I'm really delighted that we are seeing that breakthrough, and I am hesitant to be too optimistic in congratulating anyone until we see lasting peace. She couldn't credit Trump with anything. Democrats just can't bring themselves to give Trump any credit for anything at all. And they can't bring themselves to repudiate Hamas. They're a mess, that party.
They is. Here's a perfect example. You now, if you really cared about peace in the Middle East and didn't care about getting rid of Israel, you would have commented that Hamas has murdered at least 33 people. How do we know? They put it on camera. They post it on the internet. It's horrific, but you can get it anywhere. They should come out and say the violence in Gaza is created by, drumroll please, not the IDF, but Palestinians killing Palestinians for the right to control Palestinians. So you can blame the IDF for only so much. A response to 2 years ago is the correct answer, but that's not the one you choose. So we're watching this now, but no condemnation of that. No talk about the way the Arab world and the Gulf states rallied around to make this possible and that they all credit Donald Trump. So if Ilhan Omar doesn't, it doesn't surprise me. You know, if you have celebrities that don't want to do it, it doesn't surprise me. When you got people that are rational, like Bill Maher comes out and says, I didn't vote for him, but man, I got to give him credit. I appreciate that. Martin Sheen's out of his mind. He proved it with his latest comments. But I don't think Trump does it for those people that are just, you know, for the Ilhan Omars of the world. I think he's doing it for the world. So I don't think he does it for those compliments. But then we got the real focus is the shutdown here now.
Yeah, it goes on and on and on. Brian Kilmeade, thank you very much indeed, sir. We'll see you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Stuart. Appreciate it. So that's what's going on. I mean, in terms of people not giving the president's credit, I mean, doesn't really surprise me. Or they go quiet. When things happen, they go quiet and they'll figure out another way to put him down. So here's in the big picture what all this means. I thought General Jack Keane put it great last night on Special Report. This is the second phase of the peace deal being much more challenging, but it also affects everything else that we're doing with other countries. Listen, cut nine.
Oh, absolutely. Just as weakness affects them, the fact that they become so aggressive during the previous administration is because they believe the American leadership was weak and they could take advantage of it. And the facts spoke to that as well. The attack that President Trump ordered on the nuclear sites, the decisive blow, got their attention.
And in Iran.
Yeah, in Iran. And what is happening right here now with the somewhat defeat of Iran and the proxies and moving forward to peace and stability in the region, all engineered by who? American leadership on a world stage setting the whole standard for what's to be accomplished. This is what they're trying to depose. They want to have that influence, and here we have a president doing it. You betcha they're paying attention.
And when he said they, he means Russia. You know, this big meeting on Friday, they were have NATO representatives meet last night, and more weapons are coming in. It'll change the complexion of that war. The president said, yeah, I gave Vladimir Putin a shot. Now it's time to give Ukraine a chance to win. I love it. It also shows a real leader making a new decision in real time.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. It's going to be a big hour here on the Brian Kilmeade Show from 1211 6th Avenue, right in Midtown Manhattan, where taxes are likely to go up and a socialist likely will be in control. Karl Rove is standing by. He's safe in Texas. And Senate Majority Leader John Thune coming up, the very latest from the majority leader on the shutdown. Today, he could be doing putting something else on the floor, but not just a normal vote. I'll let you know what that is in a moment. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The Schumer shutdown strategy might be the biggest cell phone that we've seen in Washington in an awful long time. This whole discussion, it has no way out for Senate Democrats. So I think it'll go on a while.
Shutdown insanity. Both sides locked in their positions that Trump assumes more power and the OMB director slashes more jobs while paying our troops, at least for now. Chuck Schumer, I have news for you. You're not winning and the American people are clearly losing.
Number two.
And that is the stuff of dictatorships.
He has definitely decided he's going to use the power of the federal government to attack American cities and the people who live there.
In a country that is losing its democracy, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Complain?
ICE under fire by cartels, by Democrats, by activists, while forging forward, making city streets no longer a safe haven for illegal immigrant criminals. We'll talk about it.
Number one.
We have told them we want to disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently.
The Gaza peace deal moves forward as Hamas takes aim at would-be collaborators in Gaza and still has yet to return 21 hostage bodies as the world hails the Trump-led end to war while haters still hate. Joining us now is Karl Rove, Wall Street Journal columnist, Fox News contributor. Karl, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Karl, first off, what do you think the right move would be in Gaza, as Hamas executes different people that have been identified by the IDF as people that they could work with as they try to rebuild that region?
Well, first of all, we don't know if these are people who cooperated with the IDF. All we know is that Hamas decided that these people were the enemies of Hamas and publicly executed them within hours of the 20-point peace agreement. I mean, this isn't a good sign. I mean, the expectation was that they would somehow participate in this, but they're going to be dragged kicking and screaming to fulfill their obligations. They've turned over four bodies, for example, of dead hostages, and it turns out one of them has, you know, the forensic testing showed is not one of the missing dead hostages. They just found a random body and included it in the delivery to the Israelis.
Here's what Benjamin Netanyahu said, cut four.
First, Hamas has to give up its arms. And second, you want to make sure that there are no weapons factories inside Gaza. There's no smuggling of weapons into Gaza. That's demilitarization. We agreed that that's part of the plan. And we want, we also agreed, okay, let's get the first part done. And now let's give a chance to do the second part peacefully, which is my hope. But if not, I think I heard the president speak tonight. He said, listen, they better do it or, you know, how can I speak for him? He said, all hell breaks loose.
And he's right. And now there's no hostages to contain the IDF.
Yeah. Well, remember, several of the 20-point agreement. One was that Hamas would abandon arms, and that it would also resolved. All of the parties agreed we're not going to allow them to dominate the new Gaza. We're going to have a transitional government made up of technocrats, but Hamas is out, and. You know, we've got three things out of the 20 done: the return of the hostages, the release of the 1,700 prisoners that the Israelis had arrested since October 7th, 250 additional lifers, Gazans, and now we're going to have to turn to the tough stuff and the hard stuff. And the hardest thing is going to be to militarize Gaza by getting the Hamas to give up its arms or die by refusing to give up their arms.
And the IDF doesn't leave until an international force comes in, and it can't be from the UN. No, nobody trusts the UN in that area except for Hamas. I want to talk about what's happening to the Virginia race and the Jersey race. First, Abigail Spanberger. She's looked at to be up by 6 or 7 points, but her debate was so hideous at certain points, and she does not answer a question. For example, on Jay Jones, who was found in text messages to be threatening a Republican lawmaker and the family to shoot them, and she was asked, will you at least pull your endorsement? Cut 62.
Thank you, Ms. Spanberger. We just want to clarify, you know, what you're saying is that as of now, you still endorse Jay Jones as Attorney General.
I'm saying as of now, it's up to every voter to make their own individual decision. I am running for governor. I am accountable for the words that I say, for the acts that I take, for the policies that I have put out.
So this was constant. She would not back off. Was that a put?
Yeah.
That would have been an easy one to pull out of. I'm not going to endorse him. It's up to the people to make the decision. But she kept it.
Well, she's endorsed him. She's concerned about black Democrats deserting her if she were to pull her endorsement. But I frankly think she would solidify her standing and end up winning if she did. She's putting herself in dangerous territory by refusing to disavow these comments and disavow his candidacy. Look, this guy, remember, he says, I would put two bullets into the Republican speaker's head, even if I had only two bullets and, you know, it was Pol Pot, Adolf Hitler, and the Republican speaker, I'd still put two bullets into the head of the Republican speaker. And then later talks about how he wants to kill his kids. Now, in between, a Republican colleague whom he's texting this to says, stop, please, stop doing this. And he doesn't withdraw his remarks. He doesn't say, I apologize. He doubles down by saying, okay, now I'm going to go after the kids. So This is a reprehensible human being. He should not be in public office, and he's on the ticket. And she's worried about losing an important element of the Democratic coalition, black voters in Virginia. But the right thing to do is to say no. He should not be the Attorney General. And he should be get off the ticket. And I don't know, the Commonwealth law allows a last-minute replacement. But, you know, no, he should not be the attorney general. The chief law enforcement officer of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the guy's talking about how he would love to put two bullets into the Republican House Speaker and kill his family as well, and given a chance to walk it back at the time he did. Now, today he says, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have said those things. But this was several years ago, and he's had plenty of time to contemplate. He was confronted by his Republican colleague. This is wrong. You're doing the wrong thing. And he doubled down.
So I want you to hear another thing that is maybe that makes her more vulnerable. And then there's the men in, or the boys and girls locker room. She has no answer for this. Cut 64.
Once again, the question was, should transgender girls who are biological males be allowed to use girls' bathrooms and play on girls' sports teams in K-12? You have 15 seconds to clarify.
In cases across Virginia, I think it's incumbent upon parents and educators and administrators in each local community to
nude
make decisions locally.
That's what this is about.
Ms. Earl Sears?
There should never be nude men in
locker rooms.
Oh, my
goodness, we finally have her saying that. But you voted for that.
Ms. Earl
have
Sears,
you finally
my opponent
Ms. Earl Sears, you were just intruding on
are
time
we in
here.
Agreement
we're trying
now?
So what was accomplished with that exchange to the general voter in Virginia, you hope?
Well, again, that she won't come out and say, no, men shouldn't be allowed into girls' restrooms and participate in girls' sports. She will not be that flat out. And there's a reason why. Remember, to win as a Democrat in Virginia, you have to have a big vote out of Northern Virginia, where the local school districts in Loudoun County and Fairfax and Alexandria and Arlington have in most instances, allowed this kind of behavior and defended it. So she's trying not to alienate sort of the left wing of her party, which dominates these school district boards in Northern Virginia. And again, you know, she could say, now I know it's this has been left up to the local school district, but I disagree with it. I think we have, you know, men, you know, not to be in girls' locker rooms or participating in girls' sports. But again, she feels compelled because of the left of her party that she can't come out and say that. So she tries to sort of say, well, you know, I think it ought to be left up to the locals to decide. Well, you know, that's not going to help her either. She is ahead. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is a purple, if not a blue state. We were lucky to win the governorship, lieutenant governorship, and attorney generalship 4 years ago. But, you know, what happens typically in New Jersey and particularly Virginia is that whoever wins the White House then loses the Virginia and most of the time loses New Jersey after that. So the Republicans running uphill. She's the sitting lieutenant governor, but Spanberger's given her some running room here on both of these issues.
So when you look at his family in Virginia, Jack Cittarelli's a really good candidate. He's trying to close the gap. He's got Democratic mayors endorsing him. He's got more energy behind him. And Mikey Sherrill is an extremely weak candidate who doesn't have an agenda, doesn't seem to be able to speak without a script. And a lot of her positions are really causing controversy. She put Jack Cittarelli back in this race. Do you think there's enough time for him to close any gap that may exist?
Well, he came pretty close last time around running against an incumbent, and she has Cheryl has not broken with the incumbent. A lot of what Murphy did, you know, she either defends or refuses to condemn. And look, we know that New Jersey has high taxes. It had high taxes for years. The only time they stopped raising taxes is when they have a Republican governor who refuses to sign the bill. But he also, the Democratic governor, made a really stupid decision, which was we're gonna not allow inexpensive natural gas from Pennsylvania to be pumped into the state to power our power plants, and instead, you know, we're going to rely upon renewables. And as a result, the people of New Jersey are paying high utility bills as well as high taxes. And she can't break with him on either one of those issues. Now, again, the predisposition of these states in the post-Trump 2024 victory are going to be sort of slightly Democrat than they might otherwise be. But the fact is that both of these candidates in Commonwealth of Virginia and the state of New Jersey leading the Democratic ticket have turned out to be less than effective candidates.
So do you think he can win? Do you think he will win?
I don't know if he will win, but look, I agree with you. Look, the guy's authentic. say what you will about the guy, he comes across as authentic. And remember, New Jersey made the biggest jump between 2020 and 2024 in moving conservative, moving right, of any state in the country. Only New York moved more for Donald Trump between 2020 and 2024. So something's going on there. It's also one of the 30 states where the Democratic registration has dropped while the Republican registration has risen. And both of those add into it a guy who seems to be able to work across ethnic lines and political lines and geographic lines, because he is an authentic guy. You know, you look at him and say, you know what, I may not agree with the guy on everything, but I like him, and he seems to be earnest and seems to know what it is that he wants to do. And you're right. One of the weaknesses for Cheryl is she cannot articulate a vision in a compelling fashion.
Lastly, on the shutdown, we're now in day 15, and now the president says, I'm going to be cutting Democratic programs, and they're cutting thousands of jobs. Cut 28, Senator Eric Schmidt.
But as far as what the government's going to do, the president has made clear, and Russ Vogt's made clear what their priorities are, which is they're going to make sure the military members get paid, they're going to make sure law enforcement gets paid. And if we get a little bit further down the road here, there's going to have to be some decisions made because the government's just running out of money. And the Republicans have offered a clean CR, which is usually the exit ramp here, and the Democrats keep saying no. They're way more interested in grandstanding than governing. That's the truth.
So you know what happens, continuing to fund the government while they work it out. They don't want to, the Republicans want to do a continuing resolution, and the Democrats want to redo Obamacare, resubsidize Obamacare. You've seen a lot of standoffs. I don't see either side giving.
Yeah, look, this is going to go on for a little while longer, for somewhat longer, because you're right. The off ramps are not there. Thune is very smart. And what he's doing by bringing up the defense appropriation, the House has passed three of the 12 budget bills that fund the government, and one of them funds defense. And there's a precursor piece of legislation that has to pass the House and Senate called the National Defense Authorization Act. Think of it as laying out the strategy, and then the budget bill funds the strategy. The National Defense Authorization Act passed the Senate by an overwhelming bipartisan majority. I can't remember the number, but it's, you know, 80 to a handful, you know, 90 to a handful. So that laid a predicate for passing the defense bill. So he's going to bring up the defense budget bill. And Democrats have got a choice. They either vote to pass this important budget measure, which will sort of begin to add a little bit of trust and collegiality to the process, or they can say, nope, we're going to make this defending America. We're not going to defend America, pass that budget bill, unless you deal with our demands on the Affordable Care Act first. And they're going to put themselves in a deeper hole. I think, frankly, that budget bill has a good chance to pass. Maybe not the first time it's brought up, but I think it has a chance to pass, and that hopefully will start to point both sides towards an off-ramp. Look, let's be honest. These things, these shutdowns, when the Republicans are in power, they demand a clean CR, and Democrats say we're not voting for it. When Democrats are in power, they say we want to have a clean CR, and Republicans are opposed to it. We need to get away from this. We need to stop treating the budget of the largest enterprise on the face of the planet as a political, you know, talking point. And we're now 6 weeks into the fiscal year, and we do not have a budget in place. That's just insane.
Right. And by the way, by not getting appropriations billed in time, that set the table for this. Just get it done in time. Stop taking off August, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it, Karl Rove.
Thanks for having me on. All the best.
You got it. All right. We'll come back. We'll have a few more minutes. Then we'll welcome in Senate Majority Leader John Thune. Is there a thaw in the standoff? We'll find out from the man in charge.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I just want to post a quick message. I got all this inquiries about my car thing this morning. I was in a car accident this morning. I'm fine. My brother Stephen was out visiting me on Long Island. But this morning I was in this car accident. Guy cut me off in a truck, big garbage truck. I mean, a garbage truck the size of a whale. I've never seen a garbage truck. It must have been something commercial for, like, taking away material from construction or something. It was the biggest garbage truck I've ever seen. Anyway, I won't go into the details now and bore you. But to avoid hitting him, I hit a tree. I hit a big, fat tree and crushed my car, my wife's car. I crushed my wife's car. I feel bad about that. But it's all fine, and I'm fine, and my brother's fine, and blah-bitty-blah. Thank you to the East Hampton Police Department, the town police department, for coming to my aid. They came in and we filed a report with them. Officer Gherkin is his name, G-E-R-K-E-N. Lovely guy. And there was another gentleman there. I didn't get his name.
Alec Bolton can't get a break. I mean, it's just unbelievable. He's in the house in the East Hampton driving, but now there's video out there of the truck. I guess, can you see the truck? It stayed in its lane, evidently. It must have just freaked him out on the bend, and he overreacted and hit a tree. How do you see it?
Well, when you actually watch the video, you see the truck initially make a right-hand turn, stays straight for, I don't know, quarter, half a mile, and then makes another turn, and then you see Baldwin, like, it seems like he just was not paying attention.
And it's like, he overreacted.
Oh, yeah, and it was like, oh, no, the truck's making a right. But anyway, the biggest garbage truck I've ever seen. It's right. A whale.
It must have been doing big construction. I don't know. Why does he need to explain himself to us? Like, why did he need to even do that post?
He made the story go on for another day.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thune is very smart. And what he's doing by bringing up the defense appropriation, the House has passed three of the 12 budget bills that fund the government, and one of them funds defense. And there's a precursor piece of legislation that has to pass the House and Senate called the National Defense Authorization Act. Think of it as laying out the strategy, and then the budget bill funds the strategy. The National Defense Authorization Act passed the Senate by an overwhelming bipartisan majority. I can't remember the number, but it's, you know, 80 to a handful, you know, 90 to a handful. So that laid a predicate for passing the defense bill. So he's going to bring up the defense budget bill. And Democrats have got a choice. They either vote to pass this important budget measure, which will sort of begin to add a little bit of trust and collegiality to the process, or they can say, nope, 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 we're going to make this defending America. We're not going to defend America past that budget bill unless you deal with our demands on the Affordable Care Act first. And they're going to put themselves in a deeper hole.
So that is the position that Senator Thune is putting out there. I think they're going to vote today. He's the majority leader, and he joins us now. Senator, what do you think of Karl Rove's review of what you're rumored to be willing to do?
Well, Brian, he's kind of got it. Of course, Karl, he's not new to this. But I think he accurately assesses, I mean, getting the defense authorization bill, that authorizes all this, support for national security. It's something we have to do every year. And then the defense appropriation bill actually writes the check that enables all those priorities to be funded. And so we are, yes, I mean, this is going to be an opportunity for the Democrats to show whether or not they're serious about what they say about wanting to have a regular appropriations process where we fund the government through what we call regular order, which is, allowing the committees to work, putting bills on the floor, opening up the amendment process. The Democrats are going to have a chance to vote to get on that bill. That vote won't happen today, it'll happen tomorrow. But we'll see where they go.
Have you put out feelers to see if certain Democrats would, you need 60, right?
Correct.
So I mean, normally about 95 would vote for it, correct?
You know, normally that'd be the case. These aren't normal times, as we all know, and there's so much hostility right now. I think a lot of what's driving the Democrats is there's sort of this threshold issue of getting past this big rally on Saturday in Washington, D.C. with all the hostile groups, the Marxist groups and the pro-Hamas wing of the Democrat Party are all going to be here in Washington. And I think it's the Democrats are reluctant to do much of anything until that group gets here and has their day and they can all, celebrate that they're fighting Trump. But at some point, we have to govern the country, and that starts with national security. I've always said that if you don't get national security right, the rest is conversation. You've got to be able to defend the country. And so moving the defense authorization bill last week is really important. The defense appropriations bill, which funds all those things, is what we're trying to tee up this week. So we'll see, where the Democrats are. But I think in the end, if they're sincere about wanting to actually fund the government the old-fashioned way, this is a chance to do it.
Senator Thune, our guest. Senator, so will you have a vote to see if any besides three Democrats, if you're going to get together five, is anyone working to see if some like the John Ossoffs, the retiring Gary Peters, anybody might be willing to, or Senator Shaheen might be jumped the line?
There are people, there are conversations going on, Brian. They're outside of the leadership level. By that, I mean not, you know, it's Schumer. It's rank and file Democrats who, there's some outreach happening to senators on our side of the aisle. And I'm usually read into those conversations where they're talking about, you know, a sort of an off-ramp or a path out of this, if you will. But I think at the end of the day, they've got to vote to open up the government. I mean, this hostage taking has to stop. And the things that they're asking for, you know, $1.5 trillion in new spending, you got all kinds of, you know, the provisions in there that would allow illegals to have free health care. Those are all just non-starters, and that's where their leadership is. So I think a real solution and the way out of this is going to come from rank-and-file Democrats who are tired of sort of following their leadership over the cliff and are ready to make a deal to get the government back open again and get us actually doing the work we need to be doing on behalf of the American people.
Are you in support of the House not being around?
I think the House did what they had to do. They passed this. They sent it to us. And I think right now the play is in the Senate. The House can be obviously brought back on a moment's notice. And if there's a reason to do that, I'm sure the Speaker will do that. But in the meantime, the action is in the Senate. We need 5 more Democrats. They will have another chance to vote today to open up the government. And we'll see what happens. Again, I'm hopeful at some point that they're going to come to their senses. But at least at the present time, it seems like a lot of these outside, far left outside groups are having more influence. Mm-hmm. Then, in my view, kind of what should be, in the best interest of the American people.
So the OMB director is warning that Trump could be cutting 4,000 jobs across 7 government agencies with layoffs kicking in on Friday. Your thoughts about that? I know the rumor was that you were caught. You're telling the White House to be cautious about it because it can sometimes look callous to say you're just out of a job. Last time when Doge went in, they said you got 6 months, make a choice. Maybe you guys want to leave. Are you for the OMB director going in there, getting rid of Democratic jobs?
Well, I'm for them being strategic about how they do this and using discretion. And yes, I mean, I obviously nobody wants to see anybody lose a job, which is why it's so important that we open up the government. But I also understand that the administration, in the case of a shutdown, has a job to do. They've got to try and figure out how to move money around. They move some money around to help pay the troops at least for another couple of weeks. But they have to make decisions about which departments and agencies get prioritized, which employees are essential, which aren't. And that happens when you get into a shutdown posture. So the administration is acting in a way that former presidencies, and I've been through a number of these shutdowns and administrations, have acted. And that is they're going to take care as much as they can of their priorities. And those might, in some cases, run, be at odds with what the Democrats want to see happen. But they are being put into this position because of the shutdown. And that's why, again, it's so important that 5 Democrats cross the aisle, show a little backbone and some courage and vote with us to get the government open.
Are you solid? Do you think your side is solid?
I think our side is very believes profoundly that what the Democrats are doing here is entirely wrong. I mean, we have members like nobody benefits from a shutdown. I mean, all of us, and having been through a few of these, as I said, it is a really, really. In fact, Chuck Schumer described it a few years ago as political idiocy to shut down the government, to take it hostage, to try and achieve other political objectives. And that's essentially what they've done here. So, again, nobody wins in this scenario, and our members understand that, our senators, that is, and I think that hopefully there'll be enough Democrat senators that understand it soon to give us the votes to get the government open.
Look, when the Freedom Caucus was doing this and Ted Cruz was doing this, I understand when they go up to President Obama and say, you have to get rid of Obamacare, we're shutting down the government, they did, to simplify it. I thought, well, nice meaning, bad strategy. And your strategy is let's continue to fund the government and we'll guarantee to talk about these subsidies because nobody wants people to suffer unnecessarily when it comes to health care. We've got to be smart about it, but negotiations will start. It does seem like you guys have the upper hand, but in this Reuters poll, it blamed 67% blame Republicans for the shutdown and 63% blame Democrats, 63% blame Trump, but they always blame Trump. So what are your thoughts about losing the perception race, according to one poll, by 4 points?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, I've said this before, but nobody wins in a shutdown. And I think the American people are just, they're scratching their heads and rolling their eyes and going, why can't you guys, what's the point of all this? And, you know, why is the government shut down in the first place, which is a fair question. So, but I think to your, to your broader point, Brian, if we, depending on what happens in the next week or two here, and I'm hoping that the Democrats will come around and we can figure out a path forward, having a government shut down for an extended period of time penalizes a lot of people, of course, most directly federal workers. And then you've got, that includes Border Patrol and TSA and ATC and, public safety. And there's just a lot of impacts to this that are going to be felt more, I think, acutely here in the near future. And of course, the number one is the military, making sure that that we can defend the country and that our troops are getting paid. So those are all issues that bear on that. And the polling around this, I think, is always confusing because a lot of it depends on how you ask the question. Mm-hmm. But I think generally speaking, the American people just, want to see their government up and functioning and working. And to your point, when we went back in 2013, obviously there were things Republicans were demanding and trying to add to the equation. And Republicans in that case got blamed. And I just think that it's a no-win situation. But in this circumstance, at least, we have kept this as clean and simple and straightforward as possible. It's a funding resolution, doesn't do anything, has no partisan riders, no policy gimmicks or anything on it. It's just a straightforward way to keep the government funded until we can get the appropriations process done.
And the thing is, you've earned the perception that, like, you're just not a flamethrower. You're very level-headed, so people want to try to paint you in a certain way. It's just not working. And therefore, they like to just go to Trump. But this is really between leadership in Congress. The other thing you're passionate about, you're an ag state, and you see that China just stopped buying our soybeans. And farmers had an incredible crop, and they got nowhere to sell it. They're buying it more expensive from other countries, as well as deciding to keep rare earth from us out of nowhere when I thought we were making progress on these trade talks. What do you think the message is that we're supposed to absorb from China?
I think on that front, Brian, clearly, and you're absolutely right. I mean, farmers in my state, 60% of our soybeans are exported mostly to China. China now is shut down in this sort of trade war with the U.S. And I'm hoping that when the administration enters into the talks with China, that they can get that opened up again. Because in the end, what you want is markets. You want more demand for your product. You want to be able to sell it at the marketplace, not get a government.
How much
payment.
Time do you have before it starts going south and becomes use? When you can't sell it, how long does it have in before it expires?
It's happening now. I mean, our crop's coming in. The harvest is soybeans. In this case of soybeans, I haven't been back in the state, but probably largely done. Corn's coming in, and they've got no place to go with it. The market's not there. China's buying from Brazil and Argentina and places like that. And so I've emphasized with the White House, they have got to, when they do these trade deals, they have got to focus on prioritize and make sure that they're opening ag markets, because our farmers out there in this country are going to be, they're in a world of hurt economically already with low commodity prices and high input costs. And if you don't have a place to sell, you're going to be in a world of hurt. So there's a lot of conversations about how to help by compensating in the near term. And those with the White House and Department of Agriculture and my colleagues here in the House and the Senate, there are discussions about that. But that is a very imperfect situation relative to getting markets opened up. So I'm hoping the administration will be successful. I think our farmers are obviously patient. They want to see the president succeed, and they want to see him get reciprocity with countries that have been taking advantage of us. But, obviously getting some of these more markets open to American agriculture is a huge priority.
Yeah, and I just don't know what happened or why they felt as though they bring us through three rounds of very detailed talks and just say, okay, we're going to withhold these things and stop buying this. Here's what Kevin Hassett said, cut 47.
But make no mistake, they took a classic Chinese bullying move against us last week, where they basically told the press that they were going to have this embargo practically on rare earths, which is something that would be a challenge for our economy. And they wouldn't even pick up phone calls from people in the administration that are saying, hey, wait, what's up with this? We were about to meet with President Xi. And so it was a classic attempt to bully, and it just isn't going to work against this team.
But they usually have a strategy. They're not usually rash players. So I just don't know if you could see around the bend, and I can't.
Well, you know, I think, Brian, you're right. China always plays a long game.
Right.
You know, we think in this country, we're kind of day traders relative to the way they view the world. Everything for them is a long-term strategic. But I do think that their economy has struggles, and I think they will pay much far greater economic price from a trade war with the U.S. So we do have a lot of leverage, and the administration needs to use it in the right way. I've just emphasized that they need to use it to get deals for ag, because ag is such a key part of our economy. We not only feed our country, but we feed the world, and you want to make sure people can continue to farm.
Are you for the bailing out for just a general term of Argentina?
You know, Argentina, of course, is a, you know, China's got a tremendous amount of influence in Argentina, and they are an important ally in a critical region of the world, and so there would likely there'd probably be some ripple effects if their economic situation worsens. So I think the administration is doing what they think they need to do to make sure that countries that we have relationships with, that there's no risk that the U.S. economy would be harmed. And so when, you know, the U.S. has done assistance like this with other countries when there are economic conditions that they think are going to bear on and impact the U.S. But, you know, obviously, It's a decision the administration made. My understanding is it's a currency swap of some sort, so it's not like a direct assistance, but I think it's an attempt to try and keep them economically viable.
Right. Have a conservative win, and then in turn get China's influence out of that country.
Yep. That's exactly help. Right.
And,
exactly
Senator, right. Just before I let you go, full circle, do you think this is going to last to the end of the week? Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel?
I think that the Democrats are intent on having a very big rally on Saturday
and after
here in Washington with all these, you know, outside groups that are coming to town. And but I do think there are, I mean, we, as I said, organically, there are more and more senators on their side of the aisle. They're talking to folks on our side of the aisle. And I think everybody's sort of looking for a way out of this, but it really is very simple. I mean, just open up the government, then we'll have this conversation. And I promised, I mean, I've said to these Democrats and others already, you want to vote on your thing? We can guarantee you a vote. I mean, we'll make sure that happens. I can't guarantee you an outcome. I can't guarantee you're going to win. And they want us to guarantee that they're going to win on that, on their vote. And that's not something we can offer them. I can't, but I can ensure that they have a process whereby these issues they care about get addressed. But you just can't do it in the context of the, you know, the federal government being held hostage.
Senator John Thune, keeping his cool despite day 16 of a shutdown. Appreciate it, Senator. Always appreciate it. So does our audience that you explain everything that's going on to us.
Thanks, Brian. Good talking to you as always.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
When I look at those videos, I want people to know that I understand that I could have handled things better. What I do know is that I could have done better in that situation.
But that's not a no. So is there potentially another video that we're going to see?
Nikki, I'm going to be honest with you. I know that video was several years ago, as you know, and I apologize to the staffer. That's super important to me, and will continue to try to hold myself to do better. That's what I can promise.
But not that there's not going to be any more videos, because that's what people are wondering. Are we going to see something else like that?
I can tell you what I've told you, which is that I am taking responsibility for this situation, and I'm also not going to back down from fighting back for California.
Well, it's pretty, that is Katie Porter, who's leading by about 7 in the early polls. I mean, you got a primary in June, and then you got the election, obviously, next November. So she's got a lot of time, but there's no way that she's done. I mean, to me, I don't even know why she was leading. She's not an accomplished candidate. She's not a great speaker. She doesn't have a great track record. She lost to one of the most questionable characters in Congress for the Senate. So I don't know. To me, it gives a great opportunity for other people, but Xavier Becerra might even be worse than Katie Porter. All right, this is Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks so much for listening, and go to briankilmeade.com to find out what I'm doing November 1st, History, Liberty, and Laughs.